Blog Talk Radio.
Quotation marks, yeah. I'm giving you a long look. Obama, every day, every day, every day, every day I write the book, Mr. Obama. Can't call you President Obama, because, you know, the president would be out handling his business. Unless you called golfing and radio addresses for really unimportant things and just kind of hanging out and just ignoring your official duties as best you can, your job, you're not really the president of the United States. This has all just been a terrible misunderstanding, a dream that's turning fast into a nightmare. Every day I write the book. Let's talk about it. Today's date is March 15th, 2011, Washington, D.C., planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. The call-in number is 347-884-8500, and the toll-free number is 877-666-9305. Call in, tell me what you want to talk about, give me your opinion, voice your choice. All right, so let's get right down to it. You know, as I previously stated, there are those who have suggested that I focus way too much on Mr. Obama, and this is supposed to be about politics, and show's supposed to be about, it's advertised to be about politics and current events and, you know, all of that, but folks say I'm focusing too much on Obama, but right now, you know, he seems to be the gift that just keeps on giving. The White House got its butt stomped on today. Politics. Fox Nation says the White House obliterated at briefing. Doesn't there come a point where you have to make a decision? The problem here is that President Obama has never been known to actually make a decision on his own. I mean, when you talk, you have to judge a man by, yes, the content of his character and, you know, the usual things that we judge a man by, keeping his word, you know, all that stuff. But we also judge a man, you know, and people in general by their habits, by their past behavior. And we do, and sometimes we really shouldn't, but past behavior can oftentimes give you, provide a window to future events. It can. And with Mr. Obama, the State House in my state of Illinois, where I was raised, where I grew up. He voted present, you know, 62-63% of the time he was there. He voted present 48% of the time he was here in Washington, D.C. And he didn't make a decision. He doesn't really have that kind of intestinal fortitude, that background. Let me tell you a little story. I was a young, newly commissioned second lieutenant back in '83, and even though I was a former enlisted Marine, a corporal in the Marine Corps before my commissioning, there's a tradition in the Marine Corps where you have a young officer who's just starting out his career as a young Marine. Most young officers are just right out of college. They go and they do the 10-week OCC course or the platoon leaders course, which is two 6-week courses. And then they head off to the basic school for 6 months of training on how to actually function as a Marine officer. And then they're put out into their military fields of endeavors or schools they attend or just out in the field. Well, we are taught, and it's drilled into our heads, to allow our non-commissioned officers to run the show, because the truth of the matter is that the non-commissioned officer is the backbone of the Marine Corps, and they really run the Corps. They run the Marine Corps, not the officers. The officers are basic managers, most of them, and warriors all, of course, but managers nonetheless. Even though I was a former enlisted Marine, as I stated, I allowed my platoon sergeant, my staff sergeant, my corporals, my sergeants to run the platoons, and I gave guidance. And a lot of times things didn't go the way that my boss, battalion commander or the regimental commander, where they wanted them to go. Well, I didn't make a decision, because it's a judgment situation where you're told that you should allow the sergeants to run the show, but that you have the ultimate say. Well, I focused a little bit too much in allowing my non-commissioned officers to run the show, and it really wasn't run as efficiently as it was supposed to, because I didn't make the decisions. I didn't step in and make the ultimate choices. I allowed others to do that. Well, when things went wrong, it wasn't Staff Sergeant Johnson or Corporal Henry or Sergeant Alexander who had to feel the heat, who had to stand tall before the man and explain what went wrong. It was me. It was me, and I couldn't say that, well, Staff Sergeant so-and-so didn't do this, and Sergeant so-and-so was supposed to do that. No, I had to take responsibility, full responsibility, and let the chips fall where they may. Consequences be damned. And that's the hallmark of a leader, and a lesson that I had to learn early on, or my career would have been cut really short. Well, here now, we have a president, the president of the United States of America, the most powerful office in the world, the most powerful man on the planet. Now, while the world burns down around his feet, he does absolutely nothing. He makes no decisions. He makes no choices. He golfs and hangs out and has parties at the White House, a private party where Stevie Wonder comes in and sings a few songs. Obama is thoroughly enjoying his time as President of the United States, but only the perks of the job. He seems to be taking, he's not going to get stressed out. You know how how you see a president for like Clinton, and who pretty much aged overnight, because even though Clinton was a so-and-so, he was working. He was working, and he wasn't working in the direction I would have approved, but he was working a lot of time. And he went gray and got old overnight. Well, I don't believe that Obama will run that risk, because he is just thoroughly enjoying himself while the whole world goes to hell in a handbasket. Check this out. Fox Nation. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney barely survived the briefing today. CBS Chip Reed was clearly fed up watching the administration do nothing about Libyan atrocities while claiming they were responding with, quote, unprecedented, end quote, speed. What the hell is it with that word, unprecedented? I may have heard that word five times my whole life until this administration. Moving on. Today, the clock ran out on the White House, and their dithering was exposed. I had to wet my lips before I said that. Question. On no-fly zone, what exactly is the U.S., the administration's position before the Security Council? Mr. Carney, our position, Chip, remains that we are evaluating a number of options, military options, including, question, but a decision has to be made now. Mr. Carney, including a no-fly zone, we feel that it is important that any action like that that might be taken should be done in concert with our international partners. Through the United Nations would be our preferred vehicle for that. And therefore, we would look to the UN as a forum for evaluating the options. Please excuse me. This is a bunch of goobity-goop talk here. I think I mentioned yesterday that today is the deadline for the no-fly zone option to preparations or plans to be submitted in Brussels at NATO. And I believe the NAC will review those tomorrow. So this process is moving forward. But our position is that action like that should be considered and taken, if decided upon, in coordination with our international partners, because it's very important in the way that we respond to a situation like we see in Libya, that it be international and not unilateral, that it include the support and participation, for example, of the Arab League and other organizations and countries in the region. Sounds like a little bit of butt covering going on here and a bunch of double talk, because it seems that didn't it seem as though I said the same thing twice? Because I'm reading the same thing twice. He responded to the same question twice with just a few different words here and there. And he goes on to say, and that is our sort of focus as we proceed with these conversations. Oh, my God. Question. Is the president satisfied to follow, not lead, on deciding whether to do it? Mr. Carney, I take issue with that characterization. We think it is precisely because the president believes that the best outcome in a situation like we see in Libya, as we have seen in different forms in other countries in the region, that the best outcome will come when an action taken by countries. When the action taken by countries. Third-party countries outside the country, where the unrest is happening, but done in consensus with international partners, precisely so that it is not viewed by those who oppose positive democrat reform as the dictate of the West or the United States. Didn't it sound like I was having a seizure there? Or that I just couldn't get my words out right? Like that reporter who messed up all the words during the Grammys? And folks thought she was suffering a stroke or a seizure. Didn't it sound like that? But those are the exact words that are written here in the text before me on the Fox Nation. And they make absolutely no sense. So the response or the question was, but wouldn't it be fair to say, accurate to say, the United States is still sitting on the fence on this? Isn't it time to make a decision? Yes or no? Mr. Carney, well, Chip, condescending bastard, you tell me if, as an American citizen, would you want your president not to consider all the implications and ramifications on taking military action? Question from Chip. Doesn't there come a point to make a where you have to make a decision? Apparently not. That guy can't decide on what to have for breakfast. Mr. Carney responds, and I would go back to what I said to Jill, that we have acted with great haste. Oh my God, great haste? And we have coordinated international, led or coordinated an international response, the likes of which the world has never seen. Indeed, that's true. In such a short period of time, and we continue to consult with our international partners. We have met with, as the Secretary of State did, with the Libyan opposition, discussing new ways we can put pressure on Gaddafi. And when it comes to considering military options, this president will always be mindful of what the mission, should it be engaged, what it entails, the risk that it poses to our men and women in uniform, and its likelihood of having the kind of impact that we set out for it to have. And that is his responsibility. What the hell? Did it make any sense? Anything I just read? But those are his words. He's supposed to be the press secretary. He should be able to string some words together a lot better than that. And I would suggest to you that is what leadership is all about. No, that is not what leadership is all about. Now, let's go back. Let's go back in time. To a time when a young Marine first lieutenant went into combat his first time out in a place called Grenada. Bullets flying. No matter what you saw or what you heard, there was a lot of violence going on there. My first combat mission. I was taught at the basic school and then at infantry training school that one can never go wrong by making a decision. You don't take your sweet time making a decision when lives are on the line. This is something else I learned as a young Marine officer. When lives are on the line, you make a decision. The decision may be right, it may be wrong, but you do not dither. I'm laughing because I had to wet my lips again. That would have not come out correctly if I didn't. You don't dither around. And here, on a much grander scale, lives are on the line. And you don't dither. You don't take all of your options into account. You don't weigh all of the possible variables. You don't take your sweet time, 5 hours on the golf course, 10-car motorcade, dozens upon dozens of Secret Service and other staff members to go out for 5 hours on the golf course at Andrews Air Force Base. Violence of biblical proportions are being carried out in Libya right now. Atrocities, murder, violence, all of that. While all this occurs, the president is on the golf course, golfing. But here, Mr. Carney says that there are coordinating efforts with an international response, the likes of which the world has never seen in such a short period of time. That is crap. Thank you, Tesla. I try. I did. I was trying to do Mr. Wizard from the turtle dude. But anyway, so Here we go. The guy is incompetent. No matter what you say, how brilliant he is, how much of a genius he is, how great he is, how wonderful he is incompetent, and so is his whole staff. That's all I want to say about that. Oh, yeah. And of course, would it not be appropriate if we didn't do this one here? We must. And here it is. Like, here it goes.
Shit up.
Darkness had descended all across the land. A lone voice in the distance uttered, "Yes, we can." He gave good speeches, never sweat. He was real good at the internet. He's Barack Obama, he's come to save the day. He passed a major stimulus for the bourgeois. They said he had the deficit.
Sir, we've got a situation. Pirates.
Right after he takes a few hours to head off to the links to do a little golfing, and then right after he comes back to the White House and then just kind of hangs out for a while listening to Stevie Wonder play a few tunes, and then right after he does that public service announcement for Women's Day or Women's Month or Women's Week or something. Oh, and then right after he just kind of hangs out smoking a cig, yeah, then he'll get on that whole, you know, Libyan deal. He's probably saying, "Hey, what's that all about again?" Okay. The Whiniest President Ever by Rich Lowry for the National Review Online newspaper. I get it. You should too. That's a free commercial for them. He goes on to write, "Obama laments how influential he is." The text reads this way. It was fashionable at the end of the 1970s, after a dreary parade of presidential failures punctuated by Jimmy Carter, to say the presidency has grown too unwieldy. The historian Barbara Tuchman spoke for all the academic and journalistic believers in the theory of the impossible presidency when she mused, "Do people actually use that? Maybe some form of plural executive is needed, such as they have in Switzerland. Ooh, the presidency is just too big a job for one man." And yes, the wonders of the plural executive. Why didn't that occur to James Madison? President Barack Obama has blatantly joined the ranks of presidential fatalist. The job isn't too complex necessarily. It's too damn influential. According to the New York Times, Obama has been telling aides that it'd be easier to be president of China. No one hangs on Hu Jintao's every word or expects global leadership from a gasping one-party state that has never been a beacon to the world. In the history of presidential lamentations, this has to rank among the most pathetic. It brings to mind the affecting scene from The King's Speech when Colin Firth, playing the stammering monarch-to-be, breaks down and weeps at the prospect of the crown being thrust upon him. "I'm not a king," he says, except Barack Obama campaigned for 2 years straight to be president of the United States and doesn't stutter. The proximate call of Obama's angst is the crisis in Libya. Obama announced that Muammar Gaddafi must go and proceeded to do nothing that might give his words any bite. The administration is still agonizing over the no-fly zone. Even as Gaddafi routs the rebels, the no-fly zone isn't a panica. Realistically, it'd only be a way station to more robust military action. Perhaps the administration wants to rule it out. Fine, but decide already. If Obama wasn't going to aid the rebels in any way, not even recognize their provisional government, not even arm them, he should have modulated his words accordingly. This according to the article that I'm reading right now. Obama lacks executive flair. Talk to New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and he will tell you at length how much he loves making decisions. It's hard to imagine a Chris Christie enjoying life as a legislator. Obama came to the presidency after a political career spent marinating in Senates, first in Illinois, then in Washington, as I stated earlier. Of course, you look at a man's history. You look at a man's history, and you can pretty much tell where his future is, what he's going to do. It's a barometer. It's not an exact science, because we're all unpredictable, and circumstances oftentimes are thrust upon us such that we behave differently from the norm. But the writer of this article has it on the money, and I've been saying it all this time. Barack Obama has never really made any tough decisions. The toughest decision he's had to make was where he was going to go golf, and of course, whether he would run for the presidency of the United States or not, and that probably wasn't much of a tough decision. The guy is unable to do his job. I think, and many have said so, that he is disinterested in being president of the United States. I don't think he really likes the job. I don't think he really wants it. Why else would he just not do the job he was hired to do and do everything else but his job as president? Get back to the article now. Osama bin Laden famously talked of the weak horse and the strong horse. Obama is the show horse. As a U.S. senator, he distinguished himself more by saying things than by passing legislation. In the White House, he has replicated his role as a non-legislating legislator on a grand scale. And what have I been saying? Me and this guy who writes this article, we're on the same page here. We see an eye to eye right now. The guy has a history of not doing anything, not making any choices, not making any decisions. And here, we see it happening, and we see that the writer of this article, Mr. Rich Lowry of the National Review Online, he and I are like this. I could have written this article myself. Because I've been saying it for months. Back to the article now. His successes have been as a leader of the Democrats in Congress. Although even here, the word leader applies only loosely. Yeah. He set the broad goals and gave the speeches. Otherwise, he let Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid run riot. Mistakes of Obama's self-imposed passivity, and I actually said that right the first time, passivity, aren't as dire as those of President James Buchanan, who pleaded powerlessness as the country fell apart around him on the cusp of the Civil War. William Seward commented acerbically, and he shows conclusively that it is the duty of the president to execute the laws, unless somebody opposes him, and that no state has a right to go out of the Union, unless it wants to. Nor has President Obama reached the depths of a Jimmy Carter, who literally disappeared in the run-up to his infamous 1979 malaise speech. At the dawn of American global power, bumptious Theodore Roosevelt raced to make America's influence felt around the world and earned a Nobel Peace Prize as a result. Yeah, Theodore actually did something to get his, results. President Obama gives off a sense of world weariness and exhaustion with American leadership and has earned a Nobel Peace Prize as a result. He reflects the deep veins of decimalism running through the country's elite, the same class of people who pronounced the presidency uninhabitable just as Ronald Reagan arrived to prove them wrong. Today, as the late 1970s, the job isn't too big, nor is the country too powerful. The man is too small. Rich Lowry is editor of National Review. All right. Well said. And it's well said because I said it too. And it's well said because it's well said. All this talk about the presidency being too big for one man. Well, why don't you prove it, Mr. Obama? Do the job. President Obama has been urged to seize the reins as crisis piles up, another article appears in Fox News. Wow. A conflict approaching civil war in Libya. An end times tsunami in Japan. A Congress that can't reach a budget. And gender equality or inequality. The topic of President Obama's weekend radio address has raised some eyebrows as Obama has met mounting crisis with the same restraint and cool that characterized his slow and steady campaign for president. To some critics, the tone set by the White House in light of recent upheaval may hurt the president's public image. You think so? Let me tell you something, folks. It's one thing to be cool, and it's one thing to be calm. It's one thing to be cool under fire. We're gonna throw that Marine Corps analogy out there again. You can just, you got withering fire coming your way. You're pinned down on a beach, albeit in Grenada. It's a very beautiful place. I'm headed back that way on my cruise in another couple of weeks, but hey, we'll talk about that later. The first time back since I was there, the first time for the Grenada conflict. But nevertheless, let's move on. I'm talking about myself here, and I really shouldn't be. But I'm going to make another analogy. Okay, so I'm cool and calm on the battlefields of Grenada because the beaches are nice and the ladies are pretty, even though we didn't see any of that. But suppose I just kind of got my Marines up on the beach after we landed and just kind of hung out. Oh, yeah. Here we are on the beach at a Grenada. We're taking fire. But, hey, it's cool. I'm not sure what we should do right now. You know, should we set up a perimeter? Oh, should we return fire? I don't know. Yeah, I'm cool. No. Come on. I think cool and restraint are overrated in this case. Well, Ronald Reagan was cool. And he was tough. He not only... You know, one not only felt a sense of calm around him, but a sense of urgency all at once, a sense of well-being, because he cared about America. That shining beacon on the hill, America, American exceptionalism. Ronald Reagan, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, would have had this situation handled by now. He wouldn't be out on the links doing 18 holes in the middle of a civil war in the Middle East and an earthquake and tsunami in Japan, and sandwiched between that is Barack Obama out on the golf course and then a big party at the White House with Stevie Wonder, whom I didn't even know was still alive, singing some tunes. Who's paying for that, by the way? I don't know if they don't realize the disconnect, and maybe they don't care. But it does matter. Dana Perino, former White House press secretary under George W. Bush, told Fox News. You know, and former Bush advisor Karl Rove said that he doesn't begrudge the president for taking time out for recreation. But Libya and the budget in particular demand more involvement on Obama's part, but this guy doesn't do that. That's not what he does. You know, read the fine print. When Americans hired this guy, this is what he does. Absolutely nothing. He doesn't get his hands dirty. You know, he has done nothing in his 2 years in office that suggests that he's a hands-on president. Because I'm going to tell you right now, the politically incorrect truth, Barack Obama is butt-ass lazy. And frankly, I don't think he even wants this job. And others have suggested this very thing, that he doesn't even seem to want to be president. Or maybe he wants to be president, but he doesn't actually want to do the job of the presidency. Now, critics note that every time Congress works on their stopgap budget, it risks a government shutdown and does virtually nothing to cut spending, all the while creeping closer to a tricky and potentially disastrous vote on raising the debt ceiling. Every day, the administration defers to its international partners to weigh the best course of action in Libya. Muammar Gaddafi gains ground every single day. With the clock ticking, lawmakers and analysts are calling on the president to show a little more moxie on Capitol Hill and the world stage. But no. No, folks, you just don't get it. I get it. Obama is not a tough guy. Obama is not a butt whooper. I'm sure that he got his lunch money taken plenty of times. Probably right up all the way in college. I'm sure he got his lunch money taken. He's not a tough guy. I'd take his lunch. I'd take his lunch and his lunch money right now. If it weren't for the Secret Service, and the fact that he's president of the United States. The guy, he doesn't do that. He doesn't work. I don't think the guy has ever had a real job ever. He is not, he's the kind of guy who goes around apologizing. And this is what Democrats do. He is a true Democrat through and through. They go around apologizing, you know, handing out daisies and flowers, and the whole world is going to be all right. And you know, we were bad before, and now we're good now. And, you know, I'm going to do things differently. I'm not going to be George Bush, and, you know, I'm not going to be a tough guy, and I'm not going to, you know, say I want these folks dead or alive, or so there's going to be some so-and-so's going to get his ass kicked or anything like that. You know, George Bush Sr. was really fond of saying, you know, during the first Gulf War, and he really did motivate me big time as a young Marine captain when he said, these are his exact words he said in Congress. He said, if Saddam Hussein wants to challenge the United States, he'll get his ass kicked. And those were his exact words. I loved it. I loved it. Now, that's a man. That's a tough guy. That's a guy who believes in American exceptionalism. That's a Republican. When was the last time we had a Democrat talk tough like that? It's been quite some time. They don't do that. So why would anybody expect President Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, to get tough and talk tough and do tough things when he's not a tough guy? He wears the suit. He wears this, even the suit he wears, he looks like a dime store mannequin. He walks around shirtless, and he looks like a 10-year-old boy. No tone, no definition, no muscle tone anywhere. No hair on his chest. How can you ever trust a man with no hair on his chest? That's not a man. That's a boy. Let's keep it real. On Japan, Obama has been quick to offer U.S. assistance to the nation as it struggles to recover from a catastrophic combination of earthquake, tsunami, and possible nuclear meltdown. He addressed the crisis as well as the Libyan conflict and the budget talks during a press conference Friday, initially called to discuss energy policy. He said the United States will stand with Japan as soon as he returns from his golf outing. And he reiterated that support Monday, just after he returned from the links. At the top of a speech on education policy, in addition to military personnel and disaster response teams, the United States has dispatched two nuclear experts to Japan. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney, if you can call him that, said the president was briefed multiple times on the situation as he golfed and partied hard with Stevie Wonder, whom, by the way, I still can't believe he's still actually breathing. But after the Asian ally was stricken by an earthquake Friday, the president turned some heads for using the word unshakable to describe the United States alliance with Japan. That's a poor choice of words, isn't it? Unshakable? What a moron. He must not have had that teleprompter scrolling in front of him. Are you kidding? It's actually kind of funny. No, it really isn't. On Libya, the issue has much less to do with image. The president, on one hand, has spoken forcefully about the need for Gaddafi to step down. Using some colorful language, he asserted Friday that the United States and his allies were tightening the noose on his regime. Yet Obama's administration officials have made clear the United States will not play a lead role in resolving the conflict. What say you? Do you think that Obama will take credit if Obama is overthrown? And do you think that Obama will... Yeah, no pun intended. Do you think that Obama will take credit if Gaddafi's overthrown? Or do you think that Obama will take credit if he's not? That, hey, we didn't get involved. We didn't take any action. We didn't do anything. You know, and we just let it all play out and it happened the way it was supposed to. Because, you know, I got a tea time at 7, so let's wrap this up. I think I'll never golf again. You know, I keep my clubs in my trunk. He has given golf a bad name. I mean, really, I'm not taking my clubs to Florida. I mean, I was all set. I polished my clubs. I got some new golf balls, some Marine Corps golf balls with the Marine Corps emblem on them, Semper Fi. I can't. How can any respectable man now head out to the links again? Any real tough guy. When the President of the United States spends his time golfing instead of handling his business. If I do go out and golf, I'm going to make sure that I do some real work first. I mean, a nutless monkey can do the job that Barack Obama is currently doing. A nutless monkey could do his job the way he's doing it, because he's doing nothing. How embarrassing. And all you black folks out there who are so proud to have a black man in office, a black first black president, you should be embarrassed right now. You should be embarrassed because now you got the first black president, but damn, he doesn't do anything. Is that a stereotype or what? I know that makes some folks uncomfortable, but don't be. Because dude is really embarrassing me. You know? My goodness. Moving right along. John Bolton, the hawkish former ambassador to the United Nations under Bush. Man, I really like that guy. He's funny looking. You know, he looks like, you know, somebody's old grandpa just kind of hanging out in Appalachia. But, you know, he's a tough guy, and I really like him. Anyway, John Bolton, former ambassador to the United Nations under Bush. He wrote in a column Monday that Obama is passive as the window of opportunity narrows. Bolton warned that U.S. interests in Libya are greater than some suggest because the protracted civil war could make Libya another base for terrorism. Because if Gaddafi prevails, he could revive his nuclear weapons program. But if the situation already is bordering on civil war, some question whether it's prudent for the United States to even intervene at all. So, there we have it. It's hard. It's really hard to... I mean, who can defend this guy after all this? How could you possibly... Now, last little bit of information before we move on here and close out the show. Karl Rove writes, "The three disturbing images of Obama." I thought this was a really good article when I read it earlier today. He writes, "Last week was a bad week for America because it was a bad week for President Obama. The West Wing politicos may not share that opinion. They seem to think any week during which the president makes a speech or holds a news conference is a good week. Americans get to see the amazing, inspiring Mr. Obama. But three images of Mr. Obama from last week are hardly uplifting. First, there was a president on Libya, dithering, indecisive, unreliable, and weak, as Gaddafi's mercenaries and bombers brutally grabbed back momentum from the Democrat opposition. All Mr. Obama could say was, quote, "My national security team has been working to monitor the situation to prepare the full range of options." Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Okay, all right. Now, you know, at least you're preparing to prepare to prepare in order to prepare and monitor to prepare in order to monitor and then maybe to prepare and then monitor and then prepare to monitor to prepare to prepare and then later to monitor to prepare. If America's failure to lead allows Gaddafi to snuff out the popular uprising against his dictatorship and regain power, the consequences for the United States will be severe. The dictators will know the President of the United States is a punk. A punk. P-U-N-K. Something we already know. Our allies around the world will be dispirited, and our advertisers will be, our adverse adversaries will be emboldened. Yes, they will. Then there was the ongoing budget battle. The failure for Mr. Obama, or the failure of Mr. Obama, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid to pass a budget before the start of the fiscal year, last October 1st. That is an astonishing act of incompetence. Add that to the list. Will somebody please? The list is getting longer of incompetent behavior. I mean, if you put all the incompetent stuff together, just a long list, articles of impeachment should be drawn. Anyway, they control the entire process. I'm speaking of Harry Obama and Reid. Harry, Nancy, and Reid. They control the entire process with wide margins in both houses. Now we are reduced to funding the government of the world's most powerful nation with a continuing resolution that covered 2 or 3 week periods. Is that not embarrassing too? And congressional Democrats are whining that it is impossible to cut $60 billion out of a budget that consists of $3.8 trillion. I tell you what, a team of monkeys could do a better job than the Democrats in the Senate and the House. A team of monkeys. Yes, nutless monkeys. Could do a better job than these clowns. A team of clowns could do a better job than the nutless monkeys in the Democrat House and Senate. How about that? Now, at a Friday morning press conference, Mr. Obama called the failure to pass a budget irresponsible. Really? My goodness, he told on himself, didn't he? And said the notion that we can't get resolved last year's budget in a sensible way defies common sense. And yes, Mr. Obama, so does hanging out on the golf course and partying with ancient Stevie Wonder and all the other nonsensical silliness. Well, that defies common sense. Too, doesn't it? But Mr. Obama, here's the thing. You're responsible for all this. You're the commander-in-chief. You're the chief executive. You're the president of the United States. So if you're unable to get a budget done, then you're the irresponsible party. And if you can't get this job done being the leader, then you're defying common sense. Let's go back in time once again to a young first lieutenant who's responsible for op orders and getting those orders out in a timely fashion. The operation orders don't get out in a timely fashion. Oops. Oh, who do I blame? Who's responsible for this? It's the responsibility of me to make up the op order. It's the responsibility of my sergeants, staff, my NCOs, my senior NCOs, to carry it out. Well, what if they don't carry it out in a timely manner? Are they going to be standing tall before the man, before the colonel? Nope. It's going to be me. And it was. It was me. It's a wonder that I lasted 25 years. I'm going to tell you that right now. Because I got so many examples. But nevertheless, it was my responsibility. Now, I'm breaking it down. I'm breaking the leadership role down to a second first lieutenant captain. Let's move up the chain of command here. This is the president of the United States of America. This is his job. He's suggesting that not passing a budget, which is his job, to make sure that it gets done, probably not to do it exactly himself, to write it up and all that, but it's his job to be sure that it all gets done. That's why we pay this clown, this nutless monkey we call the president of the United States. That's why he gets paid. And he has the nuts to say that he didn't do his job, and it's irresponsible. And it defies common sense, except that he's not blaming himself. My head hurts. My head hurts. I need some Advil. Well, here we go again. Then, to wrap it all up, Mr. Obama went on to say that the budget, that it shouldn't be that complicated. This guy is the gift that keeps on giving. He said it shouldn't be that complicated to get this completed. This came after weeks during which Democrat congressional leaders criticized the president for providing no leadership. Then the appointment by Mr. Obama of Vice President Joe Biden as his personal negotiator on the budget, and Mr. Biden's almost immediate departure for a week-long foreign trip. Mr. Obama still refused to get his hands dirty by offering a possible solution. I want to tell you right now, if Mr. Obama were standing in First Lieutenant, Second Lieutenant, First Lieutenant Captain Jones's spot all those years ago, he would have been sent packing. Dishonorably discharged from the United States Marine Corps for incompetence. He never would have made captain in the Marine Corps. And here he is, the President of the United States of America. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Thank you, Tesla, for coming in. I really do appreciate it. I am out of here. God bless you all. Have a great night. Could we please start again? I mean, come on. What do I do now?
I think you've made